Can you just say your name and what you play in the band?
My name is Jason Curtis. I sing for the band and I also play lead guitar.
I'm Evan Kincaid and I play bass, and once in a while I'll dabble in the backup vocals.
So, describe your music.
It's gone through a very long evolving process, I'd say.
Experimental, a lot of experimenting.
Not experimental music. It's always been good and catchy because, you can kind of throw that term experimental out there, but we're always trying to just write something that really shows pretty much our, kind of like putting our souls on paper in a way. Very passionate infused music with just a lot of catchy hooks and.
It's gone through a lot of evolution. Like, even where this album that we're going to be talking about today, it's even progressed extremely far from where that was. And it's like, by the time we got done with the album, we have all this other new music, and we're looking back at this album, we're like, what are we doing? So it's, I don't know, it's got punk elements to it, obviously the rock and roll elements. There's a little bit of that psychedelic rock element to it, and a little bit of funk music in there.
But also that kind of like, almost like that indie dance feel you get too from, say, like Temper Trap or Young the Giant types of stuff. It's got a little bit of that flavor too.
The way my mom describes it is, she doesn't know what genre really to put us under. And it's easy when you listen to this EP that we have here today. You can hear the songs really flow together. But if you were to actually go out to one of our live shows and listen to our set, it goes like, it ranges so much that I don't really know how to describe it. It's fun.
Yeah, it's got a good flow to it for sure, especially during a live show. We may 1 second be playing this more kind of almost grungy feeling song, but then the next song we'll flip it out and we sound a little bit like Pink Floyd meets Red Hot Chili Peppers. And the next song will, oh wow, it sounds almost like Sublime meets White Stripes right here, but with a little bit of, Clapton lead in there. And then next song you're like, whoa, this is like, oh, this is like the new dancey style music that's coming out right now. And you're just, but it's a very even, like, well-functioned flow.
Yeah, we're trying to focus on heavily on the live music part of it, especially the way that the industry is today. The only choice you really have is to be really good live, unless you have the money to put into studios and be a studio artist, or you're fortunate enough to become a studio artist, which in the case of I'd say 90% of musicians, it's really just about, especially when you follow doing well. The music and genre that we do, I mean, it's a dime a dozen, so you really only have your live show at the end of the day.
Yeah, and it seems like with more music becoming available in so many different ways and more people being able to get music, whether legally or not, for free, there's so much emphasis on the live presence.
Well, yeah, I mean, when we were getting these CDs printed, we originally wanted to go with a large number of CDs, and then we sat down and we're like, well,
We're not going to sell that many. That's the truth of the matter.
I know groups that went out and they got 1,000 CDs almost 2, 3 years ago, and they're still sitting on them. And it has nothing to do with the fact that they're not a great band. It's just, it's so easy. The music is just so available right now. The uniqueness, what I'm seeing a lot of nowadays, especially more in the improv side of things, is people will just tape their show, and then a week after that show, there'll be a live CD that they'll just give out to everybody instead of just going in the studio and spending all that time. So the avenues are changing, I would say.
Yeah, you guys actually are signed to a record label, though, isn't that right?
No,
No.
No?
not at all.
No, we're independent right now. We're doing everything ourselves, and really what you're finding out, I mean, most deals that are floating around out there, it's just somebody. It's always too good to be true, it seems. And we're not jaded by that. I mean, it's just, it's fun to do it yourself, you know?
Yeah, as far as a label, I mean, we would like if someone says, hey, we're going to pay six figures to record an album, or even five figures. I don't care. Four figures.
Two.
Yeah. You pay us $20, we'll record an album. But I think as far as us, it's more branching out and developing the market and developing the fan base and really trying to just go up in flames.
We're learning a lot, you know. You're learning. It's nice to have that. I don't know. I don't want to say it's like a control issue, but it's nice to know where you're going and what you're doing and to investigate yourself. And I mean, it's probably the biggest management step we'd ever take right now is maybe a booking agent. But as far as that's concerned, I mean, doing the booking yourself and, you know, there's lots of stuff to do out there, and doing the self-promotion is a lot of fun.
Definitely solves a few of those age-old problems, you know.
Yeah.
Record company comes in, changes the music,
yeah.
Comes in, books you for a place that's not so nice or, well, you know, maybe too nice and not quite what you had in mind or, you know, something like that.
We played a bar for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, it was pretty fun, though.
It was pretty fun. It was a really good experience, but we're so used to being on stages and lights and having sound guys and things like this. And here we are. It almost felt like we were back
a couple years ago.
Yeah, when we first started the group.
And we're just like, we're dying for any gig we could get.
Yeah, you're this close away from somebody sitting with their beer and, like, yeah. Nobody wants to give you room. And, you know, and eventually people get into your music and stuff like that. Because what do we do? Like, one cover? And we do one kind of Jimi Hendrix thing out of the almost 2 hours worth of music that we have currently, and that's all original music. But you go into these bar situations, especially more blue collar bars and things like that, people want to hear cover music, you know. And it's you're waiting for that one person to go Freebird. I'm out, I'm leaving. But you know, things like that. So
yeah. So have you guys done a lot of touring, or what's that situation?
We don't go on long tours. We go on, like, 3-day mini tours, what I like to call them. We're like, we'll hit, like, say, Chicago, Madison, and then come back to Kalamazoo for the Saturday night show or something like that.
We do short bursts. I mean, if you put in summertime, is where, in fact, right now, I'm in the middle of getting our summer together, and it's just more financially plausible for us right now to do these short little bursts. Hey, let's do a 2-night run. Like Jason said, you know, we'll hit up Illinois, then we'll hit up Wisconsin, so on and so forth. And it's I guess if you were to look at our summer from a bird's eye view on the shows that we played, you'd be like, oh, these guys have been all over the place, you know. But it's like doing all the stuff you do during a tour except being able to sleep in your own bed at the end of the day, which is really cool.
Yeah.
But more or less we could call it a tour, and some groups do that. Some groups do have a tour stretched over an entire summer, and then they'll just call it like something something summer tour or something like that. But for more or less, we just call it shows and just go out and do it. You know, find a couch or something somewhere out there and sleep on it, and you know, turn back to it.
You know, do you have a favorite festival that you played at?
Right now, I'd say our home favorite festival is a little place. It's about 45 minutes from here on the Willow Ranch, and it's called Hoodilidoo. Hoodilidoo. And the name itself is actually some Hindu word, which I can't remember of it. But anyways, you know, that was kind of like our hometown festival. And it actually just got announced. I think they're having it June 14th, 15th, and 16th this year. But, you know, it's a 3-day camp out, and there's music, you know, 24 hours a day.
So what kind of music do they?
A lot of jam bands, just a lot of kind of not necessarily your top 40 type stuff. More
underground. Kinda,
yeah, a little bit kind of underground, but they're very, very dance-oriented style music. Like there's always, like, that driving, not necessarily techno, but there's, like, that four on the floor, perhaps, or, you know, maybe every 2-4 or everything. There's some constant beat, driving beat that's going
it's
behind.
It's kind of like a big dance party sort of thing.
Kind of, in a way, yeah. You could describe music festival as a big dance party. At least the ones that we've been playing at. Mm-hmm. Now, like say the really big ones like Bonnaroo, Coachella, Lollapalooza, those are pretty commercialized. People go there to hear the top 40 stuff.
Right.
And maybe see more of the jammier side of their favorite bands. because they usually do get pretty jammy. But yeah, music's usually just one, they try to project just a good vibe from the stage at all times, I guess.
Well, let's talk about some of the music on the album here. And when did this come out?
Oh boy,
December. We got it. We released it December 22nd.
Yes.
It was the day the world was not supposed to be in existence. But luckily for us, it did not end.
So should we credit the CD?
Yeah.
I wish that was the case.
So one of the songs I definitely wanted to talk about was This Is The Grip. Mm-hmm. It's very, seems like a very intense song to me. Talk a little bit about that one.
Wow.
It is. Well, we started writing it with the mindset of, man, we haven't written like a kind of a grungy balls to the walls type song in a while. And Matt came up with this drum beat and came up with a guitar part. Next thing you know, we're like, oh yeah. And so we just went with it. But honestly, a lot of the driving force behind it was kind of my bitterness towards my ex-girlfriend. Like, the lyrics literally are driven from that. And kind of like that's where I, maybe the spite comes through my guitar. That's where, like I was saying earlier, we try to show or put our soul on the plate, you know, like really show the passion in us. And it's not hateful, spiteful lyrics, more of like kind of like almost like a story realizing what's going on. And
a little bit of frustration. You can hear a lot of frustration in the song. And I think, you know, it's like we don't sit down and have group meetings about really what we're writing or what direction it's taking. It just kind of, you get to the end of the song and there it is. And, you know, there's something, you know, then you have to sit down and like analyze your psyche during the writing process. You know, what's going on here? But yeah, that song itself, you know, it does have a lot of bite to it. It does have a lot of anger. And, you know, a lot of people really like that song. One of our biggest fans of it, a man that goes by the name of Matthew Evans, he really, really likes that song. But again, people can connect with feeling frustrated. You know, there's that common level. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, it's not, it's very catchy too. You know, it's got that catchy lick and it's got a really nice drop when it comes into like the chorus. But I don't want people to think, you know, when we say there's like frustration, there's like it's a metal sound. It's not metal at all. It's very, I don't know, it's unique. It's like,
well, you can be frustrated without being metal.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I know. I guess that's
the rest
where my
of us
brain
get
goes
frustrated too.
When I hear like frustrated music, I guess because metal makes me feel frustrated. So I guess that's just explaining myself. Anyways,
yeah. There are certain types of music that it's probably better to listen to when you're frustrated because you kind of get it. It's almost like venting, like, you know, really fast punk music.
Yeah,
you know
exactly. And this is one of the songs where you can kind of hear a punky element in there, you know. I mean, I don't know. We just kind of got done with the song, and then there it was in front of us. And then we look back, we're like, oh, that's you know, it's catchy, and it's got a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of grunge to it. And I don't know. It just is what it is, I guess.
Now, EDG, that's kind of your first song that you put on your Reverb Nation page, which always, kind of, you know, always says something about a band, whichever one they choose to pick as their first one on there.
Yeah, I think that the way that happened was after I got done uploading the songs, it just put it there. And I was like,
I'll just don't think that deeply.
Okay, happy accident.
But, I mean, the song EG itself, I honestly think it's the single off the EP. If we were to, like, push one song off the EP, it would be that song for sure. I feel it's one of the best representations of the band as far as...
And really, the name EDG, it simply stands for the notes in the song.
Mm-hmm. That's the order progression. It goes E, then D, then G.
So you said that it's kind of, it represents the band and how dynamic it is. You know, can you explain parts of the song that kind of do that?
Well, in a way, it is more, it's dynamic for, because we wrote these four songs only as a three-piece. We're currently now four-piece with the keyboard player and alternative percussionist Chris Coffin. But this song, I guess it still captures the essence, even if, say, there is no, because he plays bongos during live, and it just adds to the kind of ambience of the drum pattern that my brother's playing and stuff. But as far as just like I don't know, it's just a really well-written song, and we really took our time in making sure, like...
We were under the premise of it's not the notes you're playing, it's how you play them. And so we took a song where it's only three notes long, and you know what, that's totally fine with that. And me, myself, being a bass player, I like to have a lot of notes, as many as I can. I don't like to stick to just like a root, like meh, meh, meh. But in this one, I actually use a pick instead of my instead of actually fingering the instrument. And I, so again, back to it's not the notes you're playing, it's how you play it. We take three notes and then we try and put as much. Well, there's a lot of emphasis during certain parts, like it speeds up, and you know, there's more or less a disco drum beat behind it. And I'm still really doing the same thing. My strumming pattern changes, and how I'm playing the root fifth and other things like that on top of the note, just to add it more power. And during the verse parts when Jace is singing, it's just the bass guitar.
That's Ryder's part. I was going to say with the dynamics, it really shows how we can quiet it down, then like bring the levels down, and we just really make you feel kind of honed in and focused on what's being sung and what's being like the background, like the bass, the rhythm section, pretty much holding the verse. Like the rhythm section is the song, I'd say. You guys, I just kind of play like a stupid lead over top. No.
Well,
it's,
I mean,
pretty sweet. But.
The even our producer Nick LaBelle, he's a cat out of Kalamazoo, and he's the one who helped put together. Thank you, Nick LaBelle, who helped put together this entire CD. But, you know, when we were recording the bass part, he goes, you know, you sound like a rhythm guitarist. And he's like, you know, are you sure that's how you want to play it and stuff like that? And, you know, it occurred to me that there was no other way to play just because of the what I'm trying to hold together and the power that's coming from the bass itself. I'm like, oh, I think I'll keep it. And usually I'm one that really likes creative criticism, especially from someone like Nick, who was very talented himself. But it was one of the times where I was like, well, you know, it kind of gives that uniqueness, you know, where I'm strumming and playing a bass like a guitar, and really bring more or less like a bass rhythm guitar, you know. But
plus with that dynamic, it kind of is almost a like a picture of what you guys can do, because you're going through all of that.
Yeah.
Well, we're working right now. The biggest thing we're working on is communication with our live shows, and it's not only like facial communication and seeing somebody and, you know, more or less. You know, hand signals and things like that, but hearing communication, to where it's almost like these orchestras that are doing the avant-garde no conductor thing, where everything's bouncing off the entire orchestra, and it's really about listening. So, you know, a change in Matt's drum beat bounces to a change in my bass line, bounces to a change in Chris's, whether it's keys or djembe, bounces to a different pattern that goes to Jason, and it crescendos, decrescendos, and other things like that. So it's really about jumping on the communication. I think EDG does a really good job of that, especially when you hear it live. A friend of mine said the best, it sounds like you guys are talking to each other.
So, that's really neat. Yeah. Are you guys classically trained?
No, I hate it personally.
Jason's more or less completely self-taught.
Yeah, I've never...
Street musician.
Yeah, I took lessons... Growing up, at like just playing, my babysitter taught me how to play keyboard, and when I was real little, and then I tried playing guitar when I was 8, but I wanted to play like Van Halen right away, and I got frustrated, and then I picked it back up after my sophomore year in football, and then I couldn't play football, so I was like, well, I might as well stick with this, I'm really digging it, and then I fell in love with AC/DC, and I was like, I'm going to become a rock star.
The first time I met Jason, I asked him... So, like, you know, what are you trying to do? You know, just like small talk. He goes, I want to be a rock star. I like this guy. But myself, I wasn't classically, I took choir, and I played the bassoon for a long time. And I do appreciate all the subconsciously, there's a lot of things that I remember about, you know, playing the instruments and things like that. But, when I moved on to stringed instruments, it was really more or less just me doing it by myself. And I think the person that has the most classical training would probably be our
Chris.
Drummer. Oh,
Matt would be, because our drummer, Matt, he been in band or drumline or drum corps since age 7. Like, just nonstop playing drums. He's just got technical ability out the wazoo.
Yeah, he's really good at analyzing, and it's really cool to have a drummer be able to pick apart what we're all playing, you know. And our keyboardist, Chris, he's a jack of all trades. I mean, he's half classically trained and half self-taught, and he's the type of individual that you just throw an instrument in his hands and, you know, give him a week and he's playing it. When we first met Chris, he's just decided, oh, I want to be a keyboardist. He's the type of person, oh, I think I'll do this today, you know. And we met Chris, and we had him start out, and we're like, well, he's an all right keyboardist.
We told him, get better, dude. and then he did. He whoops some serious butt now.
That's so awesome. The next thing he's around, he's doing like these jazz, you know, he's doing like jazz chords and other things like this. And, you know, he's just one of those people. I've always seen it with him. I've known Chris for the last 3 years now, and I've played in different groups with him. And he's just like literally just throw an instrument in his hands and he's good to go. So.
Nice.
Yeah.
And Matt actually was playing drums since the age of 6. Is that right?
Two or three. Like the moment he got, my mom gave him wooden spoons, he instantly just started banging on pots and pans naturally. And I had a natural, me, I just kind of tried copying him, trying to be cool. I remember that as a child.
Like, They're twins, by the way.
We are twins, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But he just naturally had it, and then, yeah, he just kept going with it. Whereas I just kind of gave up.
So,
yeah.
So are you guys the kind of twins that are always just, you know, together and usually happy-go-lucky about being twins, or have you had some rift there?
We're fraternal twins, so I think, to be honest, I think that has a lot to do between identical and fraternal, as far as, because we're complete opposites as far as personality.
They don't even look alike.
No. But Matt, we live together. And I wouldn't want to. He's an awesome roommate because he is my brother, and I can yell at him to do the dishes.
They've been hanging out since they're in the womb. So yeah, they got it down.
Yeah, it's but you know, we make an effort to hang out most of the time, and yeah, I never really thought about it. I guess it just sort of go with the flow.
Yeah, I guess I was thinking identical twins, but it is a little bit. You're right. It is a little bit different with fraternal, but you would know. So, you guys had a little bit of a rough patch. You know, back in 2008 when your bassist passed away.
This is actually, yeah, that is really rough. Pleasant Drive started off back when me and Matt were 17, and being seniors in high school. And we actually had, I wasn't singing at all. We had another singer, our best friend Dominic, and he was also our keyboardist, original keyboard player too. We played some shows here and there, some grad parties, and then we all kind of split off for a couple of years. And then back in 07, our bass player, we were still really good friends, but we weren't really doing the band thing too much. But he really, you know, he kind of made some bad choices. And so we decided, yeah, I'm going to make an effort because he's my best friend. I'm going to help him out. And so we started playing again, and started doing really well with shows, and we were like, you know, we wrote a whole new set of music, and it was phenomenal. But he ended up passing away after we got the band back together for a little while, and that just, we all of us were ready to just quit school and just pretty much, we're going to go to the big city and we're going to make it. Well, that was our mentality. And I'm so glad that we didn't, because we probably would have gotten taken advantage of and ended up doing God knows what, but that happened. And so I was done with music personally after he passed away, because I didn't want another person playing bass for me, because me and him had we connected so well as far as playing music together. But after I lived up, moved out to Colorado after that happened, I had to get out of town because I lost like 4 friends in 8 months, and I was just really heartbroken and just kind of distraught over Kalamazoo. And after living in Denver for a year, moved back to finish up nursing school, but I ended up finishing up paramedic school instead. But me and Matt wrote 4 songs just between guitar and drums. I was like, well, we can do like a White Stripes type gig, because, you know, I love that style of music, and my guitar playing has been like that for the longest time because I'm used to only playing with a drummer. So we did that, and then Matt started playing in another band. I got a little jealous, and I started kind of getting mad at him, and I was like, well, dude, well, why can't you steal that your bass player and bring him over for us? Because we were kind of dealing with another bass player, but he was kind of flaky, but he's still really good. But anyways, so long story short, Evan started jamming with us, and literally the day after
The day after I came in, we had a show.
The Strut booked us for a show, because we've been playing open mic night, like, every Tuesday night for, like, 2 months straight, just trying to perfect our songs for the public. And from then on, I was like, Evan, you want to do this? He's like, yup. And his girlfriend dumped him because of it. He's a rock star because of that. That's a story for Howard Stern, I think. But since then, yeah.
Yeah, I was in a side project, more or less just a group of friends. We'd get together, and they gave us an excuse to drink beer and make terrible music. And that was fun. That was what we did, you know, every Thursday. And so, you know, I met, well, the way I even met that is I went to a random party that was over by my mom's house. So I go to this house, and this is over in Texas Corner. If anybody's familiar with Kalamazoo, it's about, you know, it's about a 10, 15-minute drive outside of Kalamazoo. Anyways, so we go to this house, and I walked in. I just recently left the other group that I was playing with. I saw this drum kit in the corner, and I was like, oh. So I went around, and I was like, whose drum kit is this? Whose drum kit is this? And then I found this guy, and I was like, you know whose drum kit this is? And he was like, it's mine. You know, just like kind of looked at me, like, give me a time of day. And I was like, well, I play bass. Anyways, I'll speed it up a little bit. Ended up coming over playing bass with him, and there was this, he had this drummer guy that was coming in, and one day he asked me if I wanted to come out and play music with his other group, and that was more or less how I fell into Pleasant Drive. And from then here we are now, almost 2 years later.
So what's, before we do that, let's see, would we like to talk about Royal Flush or Quantitative Emotion, maybe?
Yeah, Royal Flush is a song pretty much stemming just from my soul again, and it really is just, we captured just the power of, I don't know, music. Like, especially when you hear it live, it's just, it's so epic.
Well, I want to think of Royal Flush like the song, to me, you know, especially the lyrics that Jason has for it. I mean, you kind of think of life as a card game. And, you know, the Royal Flush obviously is the one that's going to trump everybody else. And a lot of the song talks about, you know, like, you know, having your poker face you know, other things is where, you know, to myself, I guess if I'm going to pick apart a song, I mean, you spend so much time in life, like, you know, like it is a poker game. You know, you look like you're okay. You know, you may not have the right hand, but, you know, things like that.
Yeah, the second verse says, now the dealer has dealt you cards, and you look at them and you try to play your heart, but it's the heart of a fool looking like someone with something to lose. And it's pretty much like saying you're willing to play your heart out for something that you're going to know you're going to lose on. Like, what's the point of that? And then we bust into this chorusy jam, and it's just like my guitar screaming at you. Like, I guess that's how I wrote it. Like, I've never even delved this deep into it, man, but like, it's like me screaming at myself, like, what the heck are you thinking? You know, that lead. I'm like, it's like, and then like the other part is like, you know, when I see people change just because they couldn't, you know, man up pretty much. I'm saying man up. I don't mean to come off biased or anything, but they couldn't stand up to the daily issues and change either their environment or themselves or their schedule for the day to be a happier person. I mean, just, and when I say it hurts my brain, I have a hard time understanding that because I want to be happy all the time. And so why the heck don't these people want to? Like, it hurts my brain. Like,
and you know, yeah. Even to this day when we play that song live, I still get goosebumps from it. And it's really just, there's a real physiological action reaction to the song, and it's just the part where just it's definitely one of the more soulful songs that I've ever heard, one of my favorite to play live, and like I said,
yeah,
I actually have a physiological reaction to the song every single time that we play it live. And you know, for someone that I mean I've been a part of live music for so long. It's at this point, it takes a lot to get me going, you know. So it's interesting.
I guess when you say it gives that physiological reaction, that's a big part of whether we determine to write a song a yeah. certain way. If we don't get that feeling out of a song, we're not going to play it.
Yeah, when we sit in the writing process, we did it the other day. Jason did a song, and he was just like, he just looked at me, and he's like, "You're not feeling it, dude, are you?"
Yeah, I was like, "All right, well, I'm going to revamp this, and I'm coming back to you in a couple months." But anyway, next track, Quantitative Emotion. Sorry, we don't want to take up all your time here. That song, we actually, our first producer, Bo, he's an awesome, he recorded actually our first EP. He asked us, I remember we were at playing an open mic night at the Strut. We just hadn't done it in probably like almost a year. We were just like, hey, we're going to show up and play. And we do, and he's like, hey man, why don't you write a song trying to capture the essence of what you're trying to portray? And that kind of like what Evan was saying with the physiological feeling, to quantitate that in emotion is almost impossible. I mean, you can do it with numbers, but to really describe what you're feeling, it's almost above our human abilities, you know, I don't know, you just feel it. And so we came up with that, and so that's literally what the song is about, is the lyrics start off, I thought about it when I was at the show. I'm drawing a blank on my own lyrics.
I mean, the song itself, like the beginning of it, it's I guess for more or less it's a slower song and things like that. But there's a dissonance between the music and there's a dissonance between Jason's voice. And to me, it really shows. It's almost like trying to like explain like an out of body experience that you have, and you know, it's so there's like I said, there's that overall dissonance in the first half of the song, then all of a sudden it just boom.
Yeah,
and that whole transitioning part is basically like you know, the part in the part if you're at a show is just like that extremely great, wonderful thing that you have when you're surrounded by all these good people, and you know, it's I've had it many times in my life where it's just you feel like you can't breathe in enough good oxygen, and the song that last part is just like where kind of like the realization of the song. And it's long and it's beautiful, and that's the whole point of it. And the reason it goes on and on and on is just, it's kind of one of those things, is where one of those moments in life where that you'd never want to end.
Right. Mm-hmm. Never too much of a good thing.
Right. And so that's kind of what Quantitative Emotion is about. And, you know, it's cool stuff. Another one of my favorite songs to play live. So
what's next for you guys?
More studio. More music. Like I said, we just had an addition of our newest member, Chris Kaufman, and
we're writing a full set with him right now.
Yep, and the keys have really changed the game. The keys have really changed the game for us. And like I said, we're fortunate enough to work with someone like Chris, who has been a musician for most of his life. And so it's like when he jumped in, it was like he hit the ground running. And you know, he digs our music, and we dig his music, and we kind of had the same idea. Oh, this is the direction we want to go. And so the next thing for us is just to keep writing more music and try. I think our goal at this point is to try and put together a full album.
So do you have any idea of when you guys might start recording and getting finished with that?
Right now we're writing so much. I mean, we haven't really talked about it too much. I just want to focus on writing and get these songs good.
And then have a date nailed down.
And then we'll worry about the date later because we're in no rush.
We have offers and things like that from people, from really good...
people who want to record us. But, you know, it's going to cost us some money, but we're just, you know, we're going to just take our time and make sure that this is going to be a product we're worthy of selling and showing off.
We know that the group's not going anywhere, so we're at the point right now where we can just sit back and work on new music and work on probably the way I look at it right now, probably the best music we've made so far. Maybe not necessarily the best songs, you know, when you go back to some of the older stuff that I just really dig, but we're finally at a point where we're really enjoying the writing process. And, you know, it's a band is, you know, it's a group and it's a family and stuff like that. And we try and share as much bond as we can, and having that really helps with the writing process and, you know, things like that. So I think the next step is to just keep on keeping on.